Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. Hunter Biden faces up to 25 years in prison after his conviction on federal weapons charges. But legal experts say that isn't likely to be the case, that the president's son will see any time behind bars.
It's going to be interesting to see whether the special counsel even asks for any prison time. When you listen to his press conference and you read between the lines, it sounded like he may not even ask for prison time. That'll be a critical question, is what does he decide to request from the judge?
ABC's chief legal analyst Dan Abrams. The House will vote tomorrow whether to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress. Police in Atlanta responded today to two shootings. One on a hijacked bus left one person dead. Another left four people shot and wounded at a downtown shopping center. Officers made arrests in both cases. The Southern Baptist Conventions voted to expel a Virginia church which believes women can serve as pastors. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Do you know or work with kids who have special healthcare needs? Help them live their best lives.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Oh, what a weekend in Las Vegas. Going to talk a little bit about Trump's craziness there. But today had an opportunity to reach out to our friends in the Machinists. They invited me to come to their Pennsylvania State Council Machinist Convention. In York, had a great time talking to machinists about, you know, look, this election, this is a big deal. And I think it's hitting home that this is that crossroads that we've been talking about. This is the decision time. Do we follow a path where, you know, much like our grandparents' generation, that working people get a fair shot, that working people have the ability to have some say in their government, that working people actually get ahead? You know, I grew up believing in that work hard, get ahead thing, play by the rules, work hard, do better. And I think a lot of people, especially my age, believe that as well. And I hope that we're starting to see some people remember what 4 years of Donald Trump was. Remember what the conditions were, what the different agencies did. It was interesting as I was listening to speakers before me, you know, talking about laying out Trump's record, saying, look, outside of the fact that these aren't normal times, that Donald Trump is not a normal candidate, that, or I hope this isn't the new normal. This was his record. This is what he did to working people. This is what he did to us. And, you know, a lot of the stuff I'd forgotten, you know. And look, that's why you always listen to lawyers, because they lay things out in very logical terms. But it's easy to forget. You know, which is why the Republicans were, for a very short period of time, right around Katie Bliss's response to the State of the Union, going, well, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And when some of us remembered, yeah, we are better off than we were 4 years ago. 4 years ago was a nightmare. 4 years ago was bad. This is what bad leadership gets us. This is what, you know, failed leadership gets us. So, of course, I remember. And I don't want to do it again. And this is where I think, you know, as I say, we're at a crossroads. Because one of the things that Trump talked about over the weekend was, you know, again, he's given this speech about, you know, it's about windmills and about EVs and about sharks and electrocution. It's this whole blathering of, would you rather die by electrocution or being eaten by sharks? And I'm not quite sure the point of it. And I don't think anyone in the crowd was either in any of the multiple times he's told this, but they cheered because, and this is the weird part of where we are. There are a segment of our population, you know, the red hat folks, who no matter what Donald Trump says, that's the new reality. That's the God's honest truth. And it's interesting, you know, watching my Facebook feed with all the people who are now comparing him to Jesus. And you go, really? And the answer is yeah, because the new reality of the alternative facts folks. Remember the first time you heard alternative facts? It was funny, wasn't it? You laughed. You go, what? Now we've internalized this. Now it is, we can have alternative realities. We can have yours and mine and theirs and others. And you go, no, there's a set of facts. There's a set of realities. How is it we've gotten to where we are now, where go back and look at Trump's term. Every other week was infrastructure week. And the weeks when it wasn't infrastructure week, it was manufacturing week. And yet he did nothing on infrastructure, did nothing on reshoring manufacturing, basically did nothing for working people. Now you go, but Rick, my 401k. Yeah, he did well for Wall Street. Wall Street was happy. We gave them enormous sums of money with that tax cut that he gave away. But did it trickle down to average everyday working people? A touch. I got a little bit, but it's going to go away soon. Those tax cuts for rich people, those stay. And I was listening to a clip of Warren Buffett the other day. He goes, look, you know, we wrote a check, you know, to the IRS for, you know, some enormous sum of money, you know, billions of dollars. He said, look, if the 800 biggest companies in this country paid their taxes, nobody else would have to. If the 800 biggest companies wrote the check like we did, there wouldn't be a need to tax low-wage workers, for instance. And I've been saying for a very long time, I agree with the Tea Party people. American workers are taxed enough already. Corporate America should be paying the freight. But I know, but Rick, you know, workers pay that. Not as much. We have created a billionaire class second to none, and we've done that through our tax code. Because the more that they get to keep, the more they're going to want to hoard. So they set up an entire system based on how do we get more. So all the consolidation we see, all of the hedge funds and the vulture capitalists and all of these folks who come up with these gimmicks and these schemes to buy up all the rental properties, to control major industries with two or three companies, and then manufacturer suggested retail price. MSRP was always interesting to me because it sounds like collusion. We suggest you charge this, so that we can make profit and you can too, and we can fleece the consumer. Now you go, but Rick, you know, that's our capitalist system. No, not so much. You know, the capitalist system that most of us want to believe in is the one that happened from FDR to LBJ, where there are guardrails on capitalism, where labor unions were strong enough to stand up and to compete, where they mobilized workers to vote out bad politicians on both sides of the equation, where you actually had pro-worker Republicans at one point. Not overly pro-union, but they weren't overtly hostile like they are now. The reality, it's easy to forget what happened 4 years ago. It's easy to forget all of the attacks on working people when you're inundated constantly with how bad Joe Biden is. And as I've said before, the reality for me is this guy is moving an agenda that I think is going to move us in the right direction. Starting to reshore manufacturing is a huge component. You think of the last, 25 years, the number of jobs that were lost because of quote unquote free trade, the families that were broken, the communities that were broken, the lives lost, the fact that we're actually talking about an industrial policy, bringing those jobs back, is a big freaking deal and should be rewarded. Now, is it shocking to me that Biden's approval ratings are going down while he's doing a little bit better in the polls? Am I surprised? Not really. Because our media structure, our corporate media, is all about what corporate America wants. First, they want to make more money, so they got to make this race a horse race. In any normal moment in the history of this republic, there wouldn't be a contest here. Someone convicted of 34 felonies is going to hold the nomination of one of the major parties and actually has a chance of winning. We could have a convicted felon running this country. Let that sink in. Oh, but it was a sham. They would have never done. 12 people sat on a jury, heard evidence, heard the defense's response, and decided that he was guilty of 34 felonies. That is our system. And the system is set up that 1,000 free, innocent, guilty people go free for one man, innocent, be convicted. And yet here, I'm supposed to believe that this is the one innocent man? No. The evidence was heard. The jury decided. That's our system. Now, he'll get his appeals and we'll go through all this. But ultimately, in the court of public opinion, we're in a really screwy spot. Because you got a billionaire guy out there who's just spewing. If you saw the speech over the weekend, pure nonsense. And he's still competitive. There's something wrong with us. And the question is, how do we turn that around? I think you got to start talking to your friends and neighbors. I think you got to do more of reminding people what 4 years ago, what that looked like. And actually hearing about that things are getting done. Wages are going up, especially for folks at the bottom end of the scale. Jobs are being created, especially in communities that have been left behind. There are so many good things that are going on. We're just not hearing about it because that doesn't sell. That doesn't excite people. That doesn't get people to spend. Misery, anger, that leads. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So over the weekend, Donald Trump was in Las Vegas giving a... I got to tell you, the more I watch his speeches, the more deranged it looks like he's become. In fact, you know, he broke out some of the golden oldies. Would you rather be eaten by sharks or electrocuted? He's told this story a couple times. Still not getting it. But he did stumble onto something that caught my attention. He said, you know, tipped workers shouldn't have to pay taxes. And I don't know where that came from. I don't know why it came out of his mouth. It was real short. Most of the media missed it. And I thought, you know, that's an interesting take. Where's that coming from? Which is why I've reached out to Ted Papa George. He is the secretary treasurer of the Culinary Workers Union, Local 226 in Las Vegas. They represent 60,000 hospitality workers. Ted, thanks for taking time for us.
Great. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So of all of the blather and all of the idiocy that came out of the weekend's spiel, this line caught my attention about tipped workers. What was he talking about?
Well, look, it's no secret that we have a high percentage of tip earners here in Las Vegas and in Nevada. But look, the reality is that, you know, this is some kind of last minute pandering here. We've Culinary Union has been fighting for decades against unfair taxation. The issue has been through the courts. You know, tips are considered income, and tip earners here in Nevada and elsewhere that we represent, they're absolutely willing to pay their fair share of taxes. That's not an issue. But we've had fights about unfair taxation, and there's some relief we think that's needed. But you know, Trump was president for 4 years. He did absolutely nothing for Nevada workers and Nevada tip earners. And, you know, we get this, wild ass promise here from a convicted felon. I think our folks are not stupid. You know, working class people are not stupid. They're smart and they need solutions. They need real solutions. And we're pushing for relief, and we're going to continue to do that like we always have. But the idea that you get some of these promises like that, nobody, I think, is going to take that too seriously.
And, you know, I think you hit on it at the beginning. You're saying, look, you know, this is like a last ditch desperation issue, because in his 4 years as president, I don't remember this or many working class issues ever bubbling to the top or ever coming out of his mouth. So my mind was somebody whispered this in his ear, because there was no context. There was no follow-up. There was no, hey, this is how we're going to do it. There was none of that. It was just something he blurted out and then moved on.
Well, look, we represent, you mentioned it, we represent 60,000 workers. About 30% are tip earners. And a lot of folks make their living in Nevada and in Las Vegas earning tips. And there are tip allocation rates that are negotiated, and they've jumped. But we've had real assistance and push. Senator Harry Reid was a champion for tip earners in Las Vegas. But Senator Catherine Cortez Masto, Senator Jackie Rosen have both signed letters to push the IRS to make sure we've got our day, so-called day in court. Congressman Stephen Horsford has sat at the table with us negotiating with the IRS on these tip allocation issues. It's a real issue, but it deserves real consideration, not, again, just wild ass promises thrown out at a rally. The idea that somehow, you know, you're going to take away taxation from tips, that's just pandering. And look, it's kind of a snobbish look at this too, because the idea that working class people are, as I said before, are dumb, they're not. They're smart, and they understand when they see somebody kind of blowing smoke.
You know, as I was going through that clip, and I played it a couple of times, my mind thought, well, I guess CEOs are going to be working for tips then. You know, if they're not taxing it, maybe that's the end game. Because look, I look at a billionaire, I look at someone like Trump, not caring about your members or the people who are working in his hotels or others. I see him as somebody who cares about himself. So I now go, you know, I can see it. All their income, well, instead of capital gains, it'll be tipped income.
Yeah, you notice Trump doesn't talk about that, but these millionaires and billionaires that, you know, literally just aren't paying any taxes. So, look, these tip earners are working class folks here in Nevada. My parents were tip earners. I was a tip earner, worked in the casinos. And, you know, these are working class folks. They make a decent living, and they're not trying to skip out on their taxes. They expect to pay their fair share. Now, the IRS doesn't understand this industry that well. And so we've always had to go back to push back on these allocation rates. But when the idea that somebody would come in and like Trump to throw around this idea that he's just going to eliminate the idea of taxing tips, that's just, nobody believes that. Right. But what we do need is somebody who will go to bat for us. Senator Jackie Rosen has been critical about that. And look, the Democratic administration, we've gotten assistance in this discussion, but you know, you're going up against the IRS. So, we're not rich, so we don't have that advantage.
Now you've said allocation rates a couple times. Explain what that means.
Well, what happens is that for over, I'd say close to 30 years, there's been an agreement that the IRS, along with the casino industry, agrees based on revenues or actual tips that are on credit cards, et cetera, that are tracked. What is an hourly tip, an hourly allocation? In other words, what is a agreed upon average hourly rate that is reasonable and representative of the tips that you make? Because if you work swing shift or graveyard or day shift, if you work in a front bar or you work in a service bar or you work in a gourmet restaurant or you work in a coffee shop, it's everything is completely different. There's no such thing or any way to have a certain rate, one rate for everybody. And the negotiation, which was, again, was led by Senator Harry Reid and the Culinary Workers Union, was that we agreed with the IRS to come up with rates. And if we agree to pay tips, taxes on those rates, then it's essentially audit insurance. And we wouldn't get audited for that issue. Now, what's happened is that as, you know, if the company shows increased revenue or tip rates go up, then the IRS has increased them. And we went back to the IRS over the past few years. We got 60% reduction in our tip allocation here, negotiated by the union with the IRS and the companies during the pandemic, because, you know, people got hammered. And now that business is back, we think that there's they've taken a too big of an increase, kind of just pendulum swung the other way.
Right.
And so we spent time negotiating. Congressman Horsford, again, was extremely helpful. But those rates, we just negotiated language in our contracts for transparency from the companies that they have to show us and a confidential tip committee of workers.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Maybe a storm through early evening, otherwise mostly clear and a low in the mid-50s tonight. Partly sunny for tomorrow, afternoon and evening storms possible. Some could be strong with damaging wind gusts and large hail. A high to the mid-80s. Thursday, just a slight storm chance and a high right around 80. Right now, it's 70 degrees.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Managing editor of E-Bombs World, Mr. Peter Rapine.
Google this week released a new product, the new AI overview. If you Google search, can I use gasoline to cook spaghetti? Google says, no, you can't use it to cook spaghetti, but you can use gasoline to make spicy spaghetti dishes.
Not recommended. Do not do that.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So go back to the beginning. Question, electrocution or shark bite? Evidently, this is the big political question of the day. Thank you, Donald Trump, for bringing this extremely important situation to light. Because evidently, as it's been explained to me, Trump is worried that batteries are going to be put on boats. Boats are going to be heavy. They're going to sink. And then you're going to have to make the choice. Do you grab both terminals and hope for electrocution? Or do you let the shark eat you? Now, the weird thing is, and I don't know that he knows this, but most boats have batteries on them. They're there already. Unless you're paddling. So this idea that something new is coming, kind of frightening. And as I've been saying, look, I see us in a 1980s kind of moment. This is 1980 all over again. Carter comes in, puts solar panels on the White House, says, hey, we're going to move off the dirty stuff. Reagan comes in, rips them off, going back to oil. Trump's telling us what he's going to do. And here to share some thoughts on maybe what that's going to look like and maybe why it's a bad idea. I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it's great to be with you.
So, electric shock or shark? Where do you come down on this extremely important question?
You know, it makes me nostalgic for the days, you know, with both Democratic and Republican administrations when you could disagree with them, but at least it was a fact-based conversation. Mostly, you just had a difference of perspective on this. I mean, some of this stuff makes your jaw drop, right? I mean, first of all, there's lots of heavy stuff on boats already, all right? You know, and there's batteries on boats already. And so the idea that somehow, you know, scaling up battery production is going to cause boats to sink and then people to have a choice between either electrocution or getting a shark bite is hysterical and would be really funny were it not coming from someone who is the nominee of a major party for president of the United States. So, and it reminds me just of the stuff that gets spread around on social media or Facebook about, did you hear this story? Did you hear that story? That has no basis in fact. I just saw something from my hometown where someone was claiming that all the solar panel farms and all the wind turbines going up were creating a magnetic field that was attracting more tornadoes. On what science that is based, I'm not entirely sure.
That makes no sense. Now, I've heard people say, again, much in the same circles that you're in, that the traffic circles that they're putting all over the place, that's what's causing the tornadoes, because we're driving around really fast in circles and we're whipping them up.
Oh, man, if that were the case, England would have a lot of tornadoes because there's nothing but traffic circles there in some towns. And my sense is that they have very few at all. So let's debunk that once and for all. But I think the larger point is that, you know, Trump and others are spewing this nonsense to try to just go back to the way things were, which was they're getting big checks from big oil. And, you know, we'll have a fossil fuel based energy economy, and we'll ignore all these other challenges out there. Meanwhile, and I think this is important to understand, you know, the battery storage is a critically important issue, no matter what energy source you believe in, okay? Whether it's solar, wind, hydro, coal, natural gas, propane, whatever, because you can store energy that way. And that's really important, for instance, when the power grid goes out. And guess what? That happens a lot because of, you know, climate change or stress on it or other factors like that. And so these batteries are becoming more and more important. And this is a true fact, Rick. The scale up that we're seeing globally in battery production is the largest industrial scale up we have seen in industrial history since the building of aircraft during World War II.
Or the space age.
That's how big this is.
Yeah.
And so do we want to be a part of it? Or do we just want to cede it to China, which seems like a terrible idea to me?
No, you're absolutely right. And this is one of those things where, you know, I've asked this question a million times. You know, can we do great things in this country anymore? You think back to the space race. You know, we did great things. And out of that came, you know, incredible inventions and technological advances and a lot of things that we take for granted today.
Yeah.
When you put that kind of American ingenuity to work, when you put that kind of innovation to work, we can do great things. But it's that fear factor that I keep coming back. And look, we joke about, you know, the shocker shark. We joke about people who believe that windmills cause cancer. We joke about that stuff. But there are people who have internalized it because, look, there's an industry out there based on scaring the you-know-what out of these people so that they act against their own interests. And that to me is the most frightening part of all this, is that it seems pretty simple to do, because people that I thought were relatively, you know, on some level, not dragging the knuckles, buying this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's illogical, but it says a lot about where people get information and news and how it's vetted. And it also says a lot about what people running for office are willing to say, to draw distinctions or to pander. But I think here is the honest to God truth that we can all believe in, whether we're Democratic, Republican, Independent. And that is that I would much rather America have control over our energy future than either autocrats in the Middle East, which is what you get if you have a fossil fuel economy. I mean, we do make a lot of fossil fuels here, but ultimately OPEC still sets the price there, right? And contributes greatly to the global supply. Or, you know, if we sit on our hands and do nothing, China's going to make all the solar, all the batteries, and we're going to lose more manufacturing jobs, and we're going to do it that way. And I think the right way to do it is to say, look, I am for a lot of different energy sources, whether it's nuclear, solar, wind, hydro, battery storage, natural gas, you name it. Let's do it. But let's make sure it's made in America so that we have control over our energy future, and that we're also making the innovations that are going to get us to the next level. And I just want to share this brief story about batteries, because I think this is so important. This is based on a Harvard Business School case study. The fact that we lost the toy industry in the United States, where toys were being outsourced to all over Asia, and then they ended up in China, but they started elsewhere in Asia, led to batteries being manufactured in Asia, led to the innovation in batteries occurring in Asia, which left us behind. So the fact that we lost this industry that a lot of people would say, well, that's not very vital to national security, we make toys, right? It turns out that having that a production ecosystem is pretty dang important.
Yeah.
And otherwise, you know, we're borrowing the technology back. You know, all of our, you know, we have to have Asian partners because we literally lost the ability on how to innovate and how to make this stuff. And we're slowly clawing it back, but we can't turn our backs on that now.
No, I mean, you could make the argument the rotary phone. Once we stopped making the rotary phone, that first push button phone, they didn't make here anymore. That transition was somewhere else. And then after that came the cordless phone and the bag phone and eventually the cell phone. And we lost all of those jobs that decades of workers would have benefited from because that one decision to say we're closing down the rotary phone factory and we're going to build the new one or retool the new one somewhere else. We lost all of those jobs. And I would argue the technology and the innovation that went with it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's only the big massive companies that have like $1 trillion in market capitalization. I'm looking at you, Apple, that have figured out how to hack this, how they can design something in California, manufacture something in China. But even Apple's looking at diversifying and they are making some products back here and they do have some of the supply chain back here. They've seen some of the challenges with it. But otherwise, you just can't do that. You cannot do that effectively. And the point of that Harvard Business School study is that when you lose the production, you lose the innovation. And when you lose the innovation, you lose the next generation of manufacturing and that technology, which explains why there are exactly zero mass market smartphones that are made in the United States. And you think about it, Rick, I mean, is there a day that goes by where you don't see dozens of smartphones? You know, yourself, me, your friends, your family, your classmates, your work colleagues, people, are, you know, people around town. There are so many smartphones out there and not a single one of them is manufactured in the United States. Yeah. I don't want that to be the case with automobiles or any of the energy sources. I think that would be a huge mistake for our country.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, you talk about it, and I've been talking about what you just said for years now. I remember I used to have a friend who was a congressman from Illinois. He came out of the textile industry. He was one of the few union presidents who became a congressman. And he said, look, you know, I knew a guy who he was a tinkerer. You know, we worked on the floor making suits. One of the last unionized, I forget the name of Marks something.
Oh, Hart Schaffner Marks.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's it. He worked for them, and this guy was a tinkerer. He went home in his garage, and he got one of the old machines from work, figured out how to make chips using the sewing machine method to be able to implant stuff in there just by going in his garage and fiddling around, made a huge amount of money. But you know, if you don't have that suit factory, if you don't have that rudimentary job that makes somebody go, hey, I can use this application somewhere else, maybe you don't get that next innovation.
Yeah. Well, that is exactly the case. And we have industry after industry where that has occurred. And one of the most striking examples to me was that, and you know this because I think you're from Ohio, Toledo used to be the glass capital of the world, right? And the glass industry in Ohio just got totally decimated by competition from China, dumping subsidies, government control, all of that. Lost so much of it. The glass museum in Toledo, some of the glass panels there, they had to have, guess what, you know, shipped over from China to do it. And it's just like, really, you know, that's not where we want to end up as a country. I think it's worth fighting for these industries. And it does take, you know, it takes a rational conversation that's fact-based, first of all, but then it takes the policies. It takes the investment, the innovation, the industrial policy. It takes the trade policy, and what we don't need is the kind of nonsense that having more batteries is going to sink ships, and you get to choose between two awful deaths. That's ridiculous.
But the part here that I want to go back to, because I think this is the important part of all of this, to boil all this down, Trump basically said over the weekend, it all ends if he becomes president. This is why I say, look, I look at 1980. You know, Reagan ran on, you know, drill baby drill. Carter was saying, hey, let's put solar panels on things. That moment was a defining moment in this country because we've been on the dirty oil ever since. I see us in the same kind of it's time to decide which side are you on. And Trump is telling us all of this innovation, all of this excitement around EVs and battery technology and the future, he's against and he will destroy. So for me, the simple question is this what we want? Is this the country we want for the next 40, 50 years, being dependent on OPEC and other hostile nations?
Yeah. I just want to say this because we're nonpartisan. We don't endorse, but we obviously do look at policies that that the presidents and the candidates put out there, and we see what works. And here's what I know. And look, I'm a tariff hawk. I am not afraid to suggest applying tariffs. And obviously, neither is Donald Trump, and neither is Joe Biden. But tariffs alone are not going to bring back American manufacturing, full stop. It takes more than that. It takes investing in workers. It takes investing in innovation. It takes an industrial policy. It takes putting real money on the table. It means investing in those cutting edge industries in addition to the tariffs. And if your policy is simply going to roll back the investments, going to have $4 trillion worth of corporate tax cuts, is going to maintain some tariffs, and then who knows, maybe make a deal with China because he did the first time. That is not going to bring American manufacturing jobs back to the United States of America.
No, I'm right there with you. You know, it's an amazing moment in where we find ourselves. And as I said, you know, this election is going to be very, very telling for the future because I fear all of this innovation goes away. Now, one of the other claims Trump made was that, you know, all of these EVs and all of this stuff is going to be made in China. We're just making China rich. We have the ability to make sure that that doesn't happen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, you know, there's 100% tariffs in place on EVs coming from China, which is going to, you know, if there's any coming over right now and there's just what I would call a trickle, I mean, it is barely perceptible in the market. That's going to stop. That's going to totally dry up. And it's not to say they won't try to find other ways into the U.S. market, but I would say this administration, the Congress, are pretty keen on making sure that doesn't happen. But EVs, look, there is eventually going to be more uptake of these as there's more charging, as the price come down and all of that. And people are going to like not having to pay for gas. You know, they're just going to like that. And so these are going to come online, and it may take 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And the only question is, are we going to be making them here, or are we going to be importing them from another country? And unless we have a policy that says we're going to make them here, then they're going to come from somewhere else. And so it's just wrong to say that if we invest in these industries, that China is going to get a lot of the benefits. In fact, that is pretty much the opposite of what this administration's industrial policies are trying to do.
Well, again, we'll see. But again, back to the main question, shocker shark. That's the important thing today.
Somehow, I guess if you get the shark to bite the battery, kind of like the dude from Jaws got the oxygen tank.
There you go.
That's all I can think of. That's my hack there, Rick.
There's the hack. I like it. Scott, as always, great stuff.
All right. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Our good friend, Scott Paul. Check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Want to hear your thoughts? Shocker shark. Or the third option. Maybe the shark bites the battery. If we're living in fantasy land, why not? Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1969. That was the day that labor leader John L. Lewis died. Born to a Welsh-American coal mining family in Iowa, Lewis became the leading champion of industrial unionism in the 1930s. He served as president of the United Mine Workers of America from 1920 until 1960. He was the founder of the Congress of Industrial Organizations. the CIO split off from the American Federation of Labor with the aim of organizing the thousands of workers who powered the U.S. industrial machine. Some public officials and the media accused the CIO of being infiltrated with communism. In 1937, Lewis delivered a speech in Washington, D.C. to deny these claims. The speech captured Lewis's commitment and passion for industrial labor organizing. He declared, quote, "The workers of the nation were tired of waiting for corporate industry to right their economic wrongs, to alleviate their social agony, and to grant them their political rights. Despairing of fair treatment, they resolved to do something for themselves. They therefore have organized a new labor movement conceived within the principles of the National Bill of Rights and committed to the proposition that the workers are free to assemble in their own forms, voice their own grievances, declare their own hopes, and contract on even terms with modern industry for the sale of their only material possession, their labor." He went on to say, quote, "Under the banner of the Committee of Industrial Organization, American labor is on the march. Its objectives today are those it had in the beginning, to strive for the unionization of our unorganized millions of workers and for the acceptance of collective bargaining as a recognized American institution."
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, Scott got me thinking about, I remember reading a book years ago. In fact, you know, we had the author on for like its 25th anniversary or something not too long ago. It was called America, What Went Wrong? And they talked about, you know, the fact that the rotary phone, because we used to make all phones in this country, understand, much like the toy industry. I remember as a kid, every toy that I had made in the U.S., made in East Brattleboro, Vermont, or one of the places up in Massachusetts, but they were all made here in the U.S. And, you know, the guy told the story about, you know, how 6,000 workers in Chicago lost their jobs making the rotary phone. And when they came in with the push button phones, they decided that factory should be somewhere else. They wanted to break the union. They wanted to lower costs because they could raise profits. And then all of that innovation that came afterwards, you know, from the push-button phone to the cordless phone to eventually the beginnings of a cell phone, the big giant bag we used to carry around to the flip thing to eventually where we are now with this smartphone. All of those technological gains and the jobs that came with producing those somewhere else. And that's one industry. The toy industry, something else. Bicycles, same thing. You go down this list of industry after industry that communities across this country lost. It's not just that we lost the capacity to build some toys or bikes or phones or any of this stuff, but communities lost jobs. Communities lost the driver of their economy. And families took the hit, which is why we're in the situation that we're in now. And this is, look, understand, this is Democrats and Republicans at fault here. This is neoliberalism run amok. This is deference to corporate America and the need to save capitalism and all that nonsense rhetoric. It's all part of that. And who took it on the chin? Working people. Which is why in this transition that we're seeing from, you know, gas-powered engines to electric batteries for cars and this move away from dirty oil, it's my hope that this transition is the first, at least in my lifetime, if not the history of humanity, that workers take it on the chin. Maybe we don't get screwed this time. Maybe workers actually do benefit from the start. And for me, I like the guy who's in the White House right now, even if his approval ratings are at the lowest that they've been, because here's a guy who's doing all the things that we said we wanted done. When Donald Trump talked about reshoring manufacturing, everyone's like, yes, yes. Biden's actually doing it, and nobody knows about it. Again, our corporate-controlled media. When people said, hey, we should be rebuilding our infrastructure, it's a disgrace. that we have such bad infrastructure. It's a disgrace. Tom Friedman's, I went from Beijing to LAX, and it was like going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. We used to, at least I think I want to believe, we fought for better. We innovated at home. We invested at home. There's a guy who's trying to do that. And at every step of the way, the Republicans have been in the way. And this is where we have to take a collective breath and look at reality. One guy talks about it. One guy does it. I've always been someone who believes I want the guy who does it. I want people of action. Trump's got lots of words. In fact, he'll tell you they're the best words. Small number of best words, but he's got them. The other guy, not so many words, but some great actions. Yeah, I'm driving down the highway and I see signs brought to you by the Invest in America, brought to you by the infrastructure bill. I look at the factories being built, brought to you by the CHIPS Act. We're reshoring things for national security purposes, yes, but also for community success, for employee success. Scott has told that story about the glass factory in China. And I've been telling that since 2013 when we went on our labor history tour and ended up in Toledo and wanted to talk about the history of glass and the glassmakers unions and the jobs and the fights for good wages and all of that, only to find ourselves at that museum asking the question, well, who made all this glass? Where did it come from? Well, we know where it came from. It came from China. And that's the sad reality of the policies that we've allowed to have happen. And it's all been because, well, we're swayed easily by what corporate America feeds us. We're swayed easily by the corporate-controlled media. We're swayed easy by a powerful right-wing media who keeps feeding us division and anger and all of that. Maybe that's the problem. Or is it we don't want to think that we have the power to change things? I'm hoping we find that power again, because this election matters. There is a possibility that Donald Trump wins, could potentially maintain the House and win the Senate, and all of the horrible that people have been afraid of, getting rid of Social Security, getting rid of Medicare, destroying all of the social safety net that's left, destroying unions, firing all the public sector workers and bringing in good loyalists, actually weaponizing government. This stuff, very real. So the question is, again, the old labor frame, which side are you on? Do we want to give fascism a try? Is that the goal? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Something I said made you think, got under your skin, made you mad. I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any of the show? Podcast. Also, freespeech.org. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. Hunter Biden faces up to 25 years in prison now that he's been convicted on felony gun charges. But legal analysts don't think he'll serve that much time behind bars, if any at all.
It's going to be interesting to see whether the special counsel even asks for any prison time. When you listen to his press conference and you read between the lines, it sounded like he may not even ask for prison time. That'll be a critical question, is what does he decide to request from the judge?
ABC's chief legal analyst, Dan Abrams. The House will vote tomorrow whether to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress. Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrested 8 people from Tajikistan with suspected ties to ISIS. They crossed the U.S.-Mexico border illegally last year. The Southern Baptist Convention's expelled a Virginia church for its stance that women can serve as pastors. This is ABC News. A famous competitive eater is pushing away from the table of a major event.
Joey Chestnut has become synonymous with the Nathan's famous 4th of July hot dog eating contest on New York City's Coney Island. He holds the all-time record of eating 76 hot dogs and buns, winning the contest 16 out of the last 17 years. But this year, Chestnut's plate is full. Organizers of the contest say their champ has decided to ditch Nathan's and represent a rival, a vegan hot dog brand. The contest has been a moneymaker for Chestnut, earning him hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years and likely some indigestion. Derek Dennis, ABC News, New York.
AAA says the national average gas price per gallon is now $3.44. That's down 9 cents from a week ago. The official portrait of King Charles was vandalized in a London gallery. Animal activists covered the king's face with a picture of Wallace from the animated series Wallace and Gromit. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Matt Mayer on air.
I've never played this game. Uno is great because kids can play against adults without being overmatched, and adults can play it together and still have fun.
Robert from McFarland flipped a table during an Uno game.
Maybe this is why I don't play these games.
Oh, I would love to play Uno with you.
You want to have an Uno Fest?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
We could, like, have an Uno Fest for charity or something?
That'd be cool.
Matt Mayer on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Jane Matt Nair, who I usually say it's lovely to hear you, Jane, but right now we have to be rivals. We have this great Civic Media Scani Summer Text to Win contest. She beat us by one texter yesterday.
We don't have anything on the line for this. Here's my suggestion. The loser has to buy the other one a steak dinner at the nicest supper club in Amory.
Okay, I'm
How
on.
About that?
I'm on.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human